The following podcast contains themes of a graphic nature that may disturb some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
To that reddish, that pinky reddish, and then it starts to get darker and darker. And about 6 to 8 hours after death, you know, it's starting to really change into a purpley colour. Hi, my name's Tracy and I'm a mortician.
And I'm Trish and I'm not.
And welcome back to another episode of
our podcast. Thanks for joining us. Hi, Trace. How are you going today?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good, good, good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I've been working all day.
Yeah, you had a busy day?
I have had a very busy day.
You know what I did today?
No, what did you do?
I got some new wiper blades for my car.
I know why. You're going to go and have your car serviced, aren't you?
Yeah.
And you go and have wiper blades put on before the service because you don't want them to charge you $1 million to put new wiper blades on the service.
That's right.
I've got your number, Missy.
Yeah, I was at my local super cheap auto and they were awesome.
Were they? Did they do it for you?
Do it, fitted them, everything.
Was it $1 million?
$50.
$50.
Mm-hmm.
Well done.
Yay.
Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good. And was it cleaning day at your house?
It was. It's been cleaning day. I've been busy and I've been cooking spaghetti bolognese.
Oh, lovely.
Yay, for tea. I
wouldn't know what we're having for dinner. Oh, well, probably just air. Dust and air.
It'll be something delicious. You always cook something delicious.
What are we talking about today, Miss Tracy?
I think today we're going to go through the stages of death.
Oh, okay. Rightio. Yeah, okay. That sounds good. So are we talking decomposition?
Yeah, a bit decomposition, and stuff you all also know.
I know a little bit.
You know bits.
I've never seen it, luckily, thankfully.
Yeah.
not like you do every day.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously there's a lot of scope in this stuff. On the YouTube channel, people tend to hold you to your word as a definite. So, you know, if you say, for an example, we said in one of our recent videos that people don't really change their skin color too much during that time of death and after death, shortly after death.
Yeah.
Yet someone said, oh, no, I've seen thousands of bodies and they all change their color and they're all gray. Now, obviously, you're just talking from your own experience.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
And, and that's all we can ever do. So there is a scope with all of this stuff.
There's always a scope, and everybody, you know, has different experiences. And, yes, I do get that bodies do change colour, but generally, as I said, I'm mostly people just look very much asleep, just like they usually do. But there's circumstances, you know, trauma, what do they die of and all this, but I was just speaking from my experiences only and not the world's experiences of
every single deceased
dead
person.
Body in the world. I can't comment on that. So it's all my own, you know, all my own experiences I've had in my 10 years in here. So
And obviously the purpose of this is to give information to people who haven't been exposed to this stuff mainly before.
Yeah, that's true, And we get a lot of comments from people that are in the industry, and I get that everybody's got their own little things and their own little quirks and the way they prepare.
It's nice to hear that from people too.
Absolutely.
That's a different perspective.
Absolutely, yeah. But we're trying to get out to the people that have not had experiences, because that's the people that keep asking us the questions on our channel, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Don't know anything about it. So,
and they're also the people that I guess we're trying to help and save from shock and trauma, additional trauma, when and if they ever are in the situation where they have to view a loved one who's passed, or be in contact with the dead in any way, shape or form, you know.
Absolutely, because a lot of people are afraid to ask the funeral directors or the morticians anything. They just think they're not allowed to be asking them difficult questions. What they think are difficult, but actually not really. It is, you know, you should really be comfortable with asking whatever it is you want to ask about your loved one that they've got in care.
Yeah, so the things we're talking about today, it's a natural biological function, really, isn't it?
It is. It's like everything organic. It breaks down and it disappears. We all do.
And you've used the analogy before of a bowl of fruit.
Yeah, it's a good analogy, because a bowl of fruit is pretty much like very similar to human, death and decomposition. You put that bowl of fruit on the table and you watch say an apple, you know, just leave an apple there for weeks and weeks, and you'll see it start to change colour. Starts to shrivel up.
I've seen many an apple like that in my son's lunchboxes over the years when they bring them home and open their lunchboxes after 6 weeks of having them in their school bag.
And full of mould and it's got that distinct smell and it's mushy and it's black.
That's right.
So they're exactly the same stage as we see on a deceased body if it's been left for a long time or not found for a long time. So, yeah, it's exactly like that. As I say, it's organic and it breaks down. You know, so, and you get that smell, don't you? That smell of when you get that
sweetness.
Yeah, that's the same as, well, I find personally, you know, dealing with decomposed bodies is there's got a very sickly sweet smell a lot of the times. Okay. So, you know, and I do get people saying, why don't you spray perfume and all of that? Oh. Or why don't you, you know, put something under your nose and that? What that does is just increase the sickly smell. It doesn't. You can't mask decomposition with stuff like perfume and deodorants and things like that. It's just, it's not going to work. It's just going to mix that smell and make it worse than it already is. So.
It's like another analogy. It's like when teenage boys smother themselves with body colognes as such from the supermarket and they've got BO and they stink to high heaven and they think by spraying that on themselves that gets rid of that smell. That's right. But it doesn't. All it does is make two smells that are unpleasant rather than one.
But it's like, but we've all been there in our teenage years.
Okay, so obviously the body starts to change before death, but we're not really going to go into that.
Yeah.
In the stages leading up to actual clinical death, there are some changes that begin to happen.
That's right.
And I guess that's where the medical professionals can use those scientific changes to monitor what stage of the process a person is and how close they are to death.
Absolutely, yeah. That's the professionals of the medical field that do that, not me at all.
Oh, no.
Not me at all.
Well, you'd be no good in that situation anyway because you'd just cry.
I would just be, I can't be it if somebody dying. No,
not. And hello to all the professionals who work in hospices.
Yeah, absolutely.
And care for the dying because they're fabulous people.
Yeah, hospitals, nursing homes, you know, all them places in where it's just I couldn't do the watching somebody die stage. It's just, it's funny, I work with death but I can't watch death. It's just really funny. I don't know about you, Trish. I don't think you could watch death neither, really.
It doesn't worry me.
It doesn't.
I've been around people dying and given the circumstances it depends. There's traumatic death, which is a different thing altogether. Didn't find it traumatic at all. Yeah, I think I could be a hand holder and a comfort to people. But
see, I can't do that at all. I can't do that. No, I just can't.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we've got those beautiful people out in the world who do those jobs.
Absolutely, yes, we do. Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking about clinical death and we're talking about the stages as you've seen them time and time again. Coming into the mortuary. Mm-hmm. So when a person dies, initially, what would be the first change that would be noticeable?
So the most common ones, alga mortis.
Right. So what's alga mortis? That's a big fancy term.
It is.
We've all heard of rigor mortis, but very few of us may have heard of alga mortis.
So it's just the cooling down of the body straight after death.
Right, because the blood's not pumping anymore.
That's right, yeah. Okay. And another thing, like what we tend to do on our channel as well, is we, because we in the early days we got a lot of comments saying we're not using the clinical words properly. Yes. And the reason we don't go alga mortis is, and we just say the body starts cooling down is because we want to talk layman's terms to everybody that's not in that industry. So
yeah, that's right, because we're not aimed at the industry. We're aimed at people, general lay people like me out in the world who don't understand or know these things.
Yeah. So basically that's the first stage is cooling down, the body's starting to cool down.
Right. And so how soon after death would you actually physically notice that, do you think? Because you talk sometimes about deceased coming to you from a nursing home where they don't have refrigeration and they come in and they're still quite warm and that tends to spin you out a little bit.
It does spin me out a bit. So if I get a deceased from a nursing home and we're only pronounced dead like 3 or 4 hours earlier and we bring them straight into care, they can be still really warm, as in their torso, their body.
Right, but their extremities are already cool. Okay, alga mortis has already begun.
It's already begun, yeah. Okay. So their hands feel a little cooler in the arms, but they're usually wrapped up. So when they're wrapped up, the heat of the body keeps the arms warm because mm-hmm. they're wrapped up in a sheet or a blanket. And so that heat's being preserved by the cover they're in, you know, once you release
that. Being in a blankie.
Basically, yes. Mm. So, yeah, but it almost straight away, within a few hours.
All right. And so then after that, what would you start to notice?
So you would start to notice the discoloration, which is the liver mortis.
Right.
Yeah. So basically liver mortis it'll start going a pale reddish pinkish colour.
Right.
At the beginning, which is basically all the settling of the blood pooling to the lowest part of where the body's lying. So lying on the back, it's going to go to the fall down to the back, the bottom of the underneath of the legs and the arms.
So it's dictated by gravity.
Gravity, yes.
So if you die as you're reaching into a cupboard to get your shoes out and you've mm-hmm. fallen face first. In,
yep.
Your forehead and your face. Nose and your face will all be quite red.
Yep. Everything will start pooling that way towards your face and it'll start discolouring and coming up red. And that red can then quickly change purpley and, you know, you've got that then deep colour that starts to come in.
Right. So to put a timeline onto that, when do you think that would start to sort of come into play?
About 3 to 4 hours it starts discolouring to that reddish, that pinky reddish, and then it starts to get darker and darker. And about 6 to 8 hours after death, you know, it's starting to really change into a purpley colour.
And so it stains then, doesn't it?
It starts to stain after about 8-9 hours. It starts to stain the skin.
So if you start to, say, prepare somebody in that stage before it stained the skin and you're washing them and massaging them mm-hmm. and that sort of stuff, can you move it along?
You can move it along, but all you're going to do is move it and you might clear that's their coloration a slightly bit, but you're really not going to get rid of it because you're not moving the blood anywhere. You're just moving it to a different part. The only way to get rid of it and to stop the staining is embalming.
Right, because that gets rid of the blood.
So you need to get rid of the blood to get rid of the stain and get rid of that red colour.
Okay. So all right, interesting.
That's when embalming comes in.
In terms of decomposition, is that all sort of, you know, the first things that you would expect to see? So that's the body already starting to decompose, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the body starts to decompose immediately, really. That's the processes of the beginning of decomposition, yeah.
Right.
When people start to think about it, they think of the advanced stages of decomposition where they're really bad and they're already in that blackened
stage. Yeah, so that's what people think decomposition is.
Yeah,
that
but actually
horrific.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but there's a process to get to that.
Yeah.
And it's called decomposition from the beginning.
Right, and it's got different stages, hasn't it?
Yes, it does.
That you've talked about before.
Yeah.
So I guess the first stage is about blood and the circulation stopping?
That's right, yeah. So the body has no way of getting oxygen anymore, so it can't remove any of the waste at all.
Right, okay, yeah. Right, yeah. Obviously. So what does that mean?
So now we're going into the next stage is now the rigor mortis stage, which basically because there's no way of getting oxygen anymore and we've got all the proteins building up in the muscles.
And all the waste are building up.
Yeah, everything's starting to build up in the muscles. And when we're alive and we use our muscles, we
say like a swimmer doing a sprint.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So they get a build-up of acid, like they get lactic acid. Athletes get lactic acid
up. Yeah.
But then they do things like have a cool-down swim, don't they, to get rid of it and move it through the muscles.
Yeah.
But in this case,
we're not moving and we've got no oxygen and there's nothing to move that ATP, which is, you know, the proteins in the blood. We can't move them anymore. So now they're building in the muscles and they're basically locking the muscles.
Right. So you get that stiffness that people know as rigor mortis.
Yeah. So then we're at that stage. And at that early stage of rigor mortis, it's really extremely hard to move.
Right.
The joints and the limbs and trying to move. And that's when you get that really stiff.
And how soon after death does that come into play?
Rigor mortis can come in about 4 to 6 hours after death.
But yeah, it only lasts for a certain amount of time, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, up to about 72 hours rigor mortis will last. And then it naturally.
And then it would naturally dissipate?
It naturally dissipates,
so yeah, people don't know that. I think yeah, generally people think that once yes, the body goes rigid, it's rigid. Rigid, and that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, it'll dissipate naturally itself. You know, we're still going through the process of the body breaking down, so then proteins will eventually break down and eventually it will release. And once rigor mortis is released, it will never come back.
Right, so that would cause problems, I would assume, for transport teams going to pick the deceased up, sort of from residences.
Yeah, and it has many times.
So have you experienced that before?
Oh, many, many times. You know, somebody dies in a chair.
Yeah.
And you get there and it's like 4 hours later or 6 hours later and you really cannot move them out of that position that's sitting in a chair. So we'll take them off the chair under the stretcher and their legs are in the air. You know, it's like, oh, my God, we can't. So if I'm there, I'll massage the joints if I can. But sometimes, like I say, in the early stages, it's so difficult to move the muscles and move that
acid buildup
yeah, out of their muscles. It's just impossible. And you don't want to start really massaging too firmly because it distresses the family too.
Yes.
So we will transfer.
You would lie someone like that on the side.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they'd look all curled up.
Yeah. And it'd look like they're curled up asleep.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that's how we would transfer them. And then once I get them to the mortuary, then, because we don't want them on the side, because that means all the blood's going to pool to that side and we're going to have purple at one side of the body and the face.
Which is only a problem if the family want to view. It's yes, a problem yeah, for the mortician.
Yeah, it is a problem. So, you know, when we get them back to the mortuary, we'll then massage the muscles and straighten the legs out and lie them flat.
Yeah. So then as decomposition continues, so obviously now as we start to talk about the different stages of decomposition, we're talking about someone who's just died at home and hasn't been taken into cold storage after death.
Yes, yes.
Because that will slow that process, won't it?
It does slow the process down. It doesn't stop the process, it just slows it right down.
Right, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So for all intensive purposes, we're talking about little grandma who's died at home
yep,
and nobody's found
and
her.
And nobody's found her, yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So then what would happen after the rigor has come in and that sort of started to progress and then dissipate on its own, is there the sort of a next stage that you would expect to see?
Yeah. Yeah, the next stage is probably the bloating stage.
Right.
And the buildup of gases.
Right.
You know, you've got your build-up because your bacteria by now is going rampant through the body, you know, and we've got the build-up of all the gases. And the gases are built up inside so that bloats the stomach.
Right.
And, you know, you've got your distension of the stomach area. So, yeah, it can sometimes double in size.
Really?
Yeah.
That must be distressing.
Yeah. And sometimes it gets so large and tight, it's like feeling like a drum skin when you touch the
right,
tummy, and they won't go pop or explode because the gas is seeping out through the vagina, the anus, or the penis,
the nose,
yeah, the eyes,
the, you know, orifices.
Yeah, that's right. Everywhere that's got an opening in the mouth, it slowly, and also, you know, it just slowly dissipates.
It just slowly leaks out.
So that eventually will go down itself naturally too.
Right.
After a long time.
Right. So why is it then that during your process of preparing a body for a viewing or a service, why do you often have to go in and deal with that?
And aspirate?
Yes.
Yeah. Because it could take a long time for that bloating to go down. But if I don't stop it, that's the part of the decomposition where the body's rapidly decomposing. The gases and the bacteria are running rampant through the body. And what I'm doing when I deflate,
when you aspirate,
and aspirate, is pulling out the fluids in the gas and try to clear out as much as I can. That brings the tummy back down, and it also clears out some of that gas and bacteria. And then I replace it with a chemical, a cavity chemical, which then stops the bacteria briefly.
So that's like a topical embalm for the inside.
Basically, yes.
Right.
Yeah. So that then stops that. So that gives it enough time for a week, you know, to hold the deceased till they want to view it.
In a cool room.
In a cool room, yeah. In like them cases, yeah.
Right. So obviously that's different to a complete embalm, which goes through the arteries.
Yeah.
But it's just enough to stop that gas and
it just takes that gas away and it just clears out the air inside.
So do the limbs bloat?
The limbs don't bloat as in you see in the bloat of the stomach, the torso area. But what will start to happen is fluids will start building up and you'll start getting edema.
Is that because the cell walls are breaking down? Yeah, the bacteria is attacking everything.
Yeah, everything's breaking down. So now we've got fluid leaking everywhere through the body and we've now got a build up of fluid, which is edema. Like as you do when you're alive, you get, you know, your ankles get swollen because you've got water retention. It's, you know, a similar thing. It looks like water retention. So the limbs will start to swell. And it swells because of the edema.
So that would be the time that little grandma who's died at home would probably be found because someone would start to smell her.
Yeah, the smell would be starting to come.
And we've all heard stories about the fact that once that's happened and seeped into the floorboards and into the floor coverings and things, that you actually have to start removing parts of the house to get rid of it.
Yeah, because we're going into putrefaction then.
Right.
So we're going into
A big word.
It is a big word.
Okay.
And it is where the liquid's starting to leak out of the body now. It's starting to
purge?
Come out. There's the person would have been purging by now. The purge will start with the bloating.
Right. So
because of the pressure. So it's fluid because of the pressure and the tummy being like twice as big. We've got a lot of gas pushing on the organs and pushing on everything. So anything that's in there, urine, feces, could be pushed out. You know, blood or anything in the lungs and stuff could be pushed. Anything out the mouth, so in the nose, so everything. So we're talking purge through the body.
Which is another reason why you aspirate, because you don't want to have a viewing and have dribble coming out of grandma's mouth.
Absolutely, because that's another one is you've got to clear out that
distressing
fluid.
For people.
Absolutely,
they don't
want
to see that.
Yes.
Okay, rightio. So we're talking how far out of death are we talking at this point? Like for the bloat to have sort of happened and the purge to have happened.
Yeah, 3 to 5 days
right
after death.
Where do we go from there? Like that's pretty gruesome.
Yeah, then we're going into the active decay.
Right.
Yeah, so the active decay, basically the fluids are released through, like we've just talked about, all the orifice and everywhere, which is, you know, there's an opening. We're starting to, you know, see that fluid coming out. And also because we've got the edema going on and the fluid and the skin starts to basically break down and we get desquamation.
Oh, you like that word.
I like that word, desquamation.
And what is that? What's a layman's term for that?
So that's your skin slip.
Oh, okay.
So that's when the skin starts to peel away, the top layer of your skin comes off.
So that's when you as a mortician have to be really careful, delicate dealing with the body because you can lose whole layers of skin if you're too rough.
Absolutely, yeah. And you will probably lose layers of skin at this stage. But what we do then, them layers of skin would come off, but then topically we'd use cordurant and dry the skin out as much as we can and then cover it with blueies. And we'll use a product that I use called Sani Gel, which is an embalming gel, which will cover that to stop, you know, any more bacteria or breakdown, and we'd wrap them in bandages. So
Okay. But back to little grandma who's died at home and
nobody's
found her yet.
Yeah.
So basically, I guess what it sounds like to me is that everything becomes very wet and fluidy.
Yes.
And then everything dries up. And back to the fruit bowl, you actually see that happen, don't you? If you leave an apple there for a month, it starts to wither.
It withers,
loses its moisture content, doesn't it?
Yeah. And, of course, the hair falls out too.
Right.
And your nails fall off because you've got your skin slipping. Sometimes you can deglove your feet and your hands. So basically when that happens, you can basically take the hand off and the nails are attached to the skin.
Ooh.
So it looks like a rubber glove you can put your hand into.
Seriously?
Yep, it is.
Oh,
or your feet
horrific.
Can come off and it looks like you could put your own toes in that, and the toenails are still attached to the skin.
How do you do that job?
It's a really difficult. I now know it's a natural part and it's science. So I treat it as, this is science. This is what happens to us all organically, every animal, every human.
Yeah. Well, it's no
bits
different
of
to
plants,
anything like
fruits,
pregnancy or, you know, aging or, you know, the natural processes of life.
Yeah, it is the natural processes. And when I first ever seen a badly decomposed body, it was one of them days where you go, I can't do this job, I have to walk out. And then you go back in and then you think, oh, well, why am I doing the job? You know why.
Why?
Well, because we're caring for these people who, you know, you need people to care for, you know, deceased bodies as well. You know, I know you'll get people say, just throw them in the fire, they shouldn't be touched and all of this, but why not?
But because what about their families?
The family need that, and what about the person that's died? And just because of my own experiences, so, you know, I just think we should care for these people and look after them. So,
regardless of what stage they're in.
What stage they're at, yeah. And they are hard stages, but I have learned to deal with it and cope with that, and now I understand.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've talked before on the YouTube channel about things like how you would present somebody like that in their coffin, not for a viewing as such, but how you would, like, the family brings clothes for their deceased person, not really understanding at what stage of decomposition they're at. What do you do?
Yeah, at these stages we're dressing, we've got garments called unialls.
Right.
And basically a uniall is basically like an overall. It's a plastic gown with...
like a hazmat suit.
It's like a hazmat suit, but the feet and the hands are sealed. So right. It's basically like putting them in a jumpsuit.
But it's a bag.
It's a bag, right. But it's shaped as a jumpsuit. Yep. So you would, after I've tread the body, you know, done all of the work I can possibly do, wrap them in blueies and absorbed all the liquid, dried the body out, I would then put this uniall on the body, covering it, and it covers the whole body, and then we can dress on top of that.
So that's if the family wants to view their person.
Yes.
And in that situation, you would tell them if they asked what's going on.
Yeah.
But you've also talked about situations where you can't dress them.
Yes.
And what you do with the clothes when the family brings in the shoes and the socks and So just tell everybody a little bit about that, because I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. This stages was just impossible to actually put clothes on at all. So what I would do is wrap the body up and wrap the body in all the blueies and wrap the body in a sheet. But what I'd do is say it was a gentleman and he had a suit that needed to be dressed in, and underpants and socks. I would put the underpants inside the trousers, as if you got your underpants first, then your trousers, and the socks in the bottom of the trousers, and lay that across the bottom part of the body where the trousers and the socks and the underpants would sit.
So he's wrapped up in his shroud or in his sheet.
Yeah, he's wrapped
and
up.
And you're just laying this on the top.
On the top, right. Yeah. And I put the shoes at the base of his feet.
Where they go.
Where they go. And the shirt I would tuck into the trousers. And if he's got a waistcoat, I'd put that in, and then a jacket, and I'd put the sleeves of the shirt through the jacket sleeves as if he's being dressed. And I'd put the tie on and tie the tie as if the tie's on. And if there's jewellery to put on, say he had a necklace, I'd put that round just under the collar of the shirt. And a ring I would put near where the hand would be at the end of the sleeve.
That's sweet.
And just things like that. So it looks like the person's been dressed, but it's just laid across the top.
So in running terms, because you and I are both runners, and a lot of people who listen to this will know that, we call that a flat lay, and you normally do it the night before an event where
that's
you lay all your clothes out ready.
Exactly,
and
right.
You take photos for Instagram, and you put your running shorts and your little bib on top that's with your number. And your shirt and your jumper and your beanie at the top and your socks at the bottom. So it's like that.
It's exactly like what we do, yeah. Okay. So it's placing it out. It looks exactly, that's what I'm going to look like tomorrow when I get up at stupid o'clock to start my run at 6 o'clock.
Yep.
And there you go. That's exactly what it is. I like that. I like that. That's
okay,
cool.
So what happens if a family really, really wants to view their loved one and they're already undergoing the stages of decomposition? What would you do?
I would definitely tell them the stage of the decomposition they're at, and be at that stage where there's no face, because we're going into decomposition where after putrefaction we're starting to get into that stage where the eyes have been eaten away by the maggots, everything's gone, there's nothing there, it's really just very liquid, you know, there's nothing to salvage anymore, and
they don't look like they do.
No, and the colour's totally gone, and it's colour you can't bring back, because once that's happened at that stage, doesn't matter if you embalm, which I would embalm still, it just stops it at that stage. It doesn't reverse it.
Right.
It cannot change it. It would just stop where it was.
Right. So you'd tell the family how bad it was in terms that they could accept.
Yeah.
And would you still, okay, so they're still saying that they need to see?
Yeah.
What would you do?
Oh, I would advise to embalm the body to stop this mm-hmm. going any further. And also that if they do want to have a viewing, I would maybe advise with a veil over the coffin, over the face.
Just to soften it a bit?
Soften, mm. yeah, yeah. One way you can see through it, but just yeah. soften it and take it off. But also to tell them that the smell will still be there, but not as strong. Mm-hmm. There'll still be a slight odour, because even when you embalm, it's really difficult to get rid of that odour because we've gone too far. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So that's what I would do. I would never refuse if they absolutely were adamant to see the body.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why. So I would never, ever refuse. But I will tell them that it could be very distressed.
Your business that you work for actually gets them to sign a waiver, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. yeah. Just to say that we have explained what then this could actually
be traumatic.
Traumatic, and it could, you know, affect you for a long time, mm-hmm. actually seeing your loved one like that and not how you remember them, because it would, it's very confronting.
It is. I can imagine.
Very confident. And I would say, no, don't. But act one, say you can't.
Yes.
I just advise, you know, and I would advise them to say it would be better if you didn't view, and this is the reason why.
And you've actually had situations, not through decomposition, but through absolute trauma, where the body can't be recognised or salvaged.
Yes.
And, you know.
Yeah.
Person versus train, etc.
Yeah.
Where they still want to have a viewing, and you've got little tips and techniques that you can make some sort of closeness possible for them.
Yeah. Say we get a victim in that's, you know, we've got no face or anything that we can really do anything with. I would rebuild like a. If we're not doing a full reconstruction, there'll be a rebuilding some like cotton and. Plaster of Paris and different stuff and all that kind, and underneath a bandage and bandage the face, a bit like the Invisible Man.
Right.
You know, if you remember, if anybody remembers the movies and the programs from the 70s, it's in stuff like that. So it the features are there, but we're not doing a full rebuild, because sometimes it's quite impossible.
Yeah.
And also you would another thing I would do is place the body, especially if it's a really horrific accident, like a train, you say, in the position of a human.
Yes.
You know, because sometimes there's just nothing left.
Yeah.
And have like a sheet or something over the top. And if there's some kind of part of the body they didn't touch, to know it's them, then.
You would make that available
we'll do
for the
that.
Family. Absolutely. And you've also talked before, I think previously on this podcast with Jancine, about techniques like using a ribbon.
Yes, yeah, that is a really, really good one. If it's really, you know, there's cases where the person doesn't look human anymore, there's nothing left, you know, maybe it's just some a hand, foot, it's really quite confronting, and burned victims are really, really awful, and a lot of people, you know, when you tell them, won't view. So the ribbon around the hand or the wrist. Of the deceased person, and then have the ribbon coming out of the coffin lid so the person, the family can actually hold on to that ribbon, because that ribbon's actually attached to the
right.
the deceased. So it's like a connection that you can have
without
the viewing.
Seeing.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Which a lot of people really do like, you know, to because you feel that connection.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's
it. Wow, the horrific things that you see.
There's some, yeah. Sometimes it's just impossible to do anything to bring that person back to a person.
To a rebuild, yeah.
Because there's some awful accidents out there as well.
Yeah, and when you think of the many ways people die, there must be different things that affect, like we were talking about decomposition, there must be things like people who die in water must
yeah.
affect that decomposition process in a different way, does it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And water, we can start to decompose a lot faster. It depends, again, on temperature. If it's cold water, you might preserve the body a bit longer, actually,
right.
but
okay.
we're still, it'll still go through a process of bloating and, yeah, the skin off, you really peel off a lot easier and faster
mm-hmm.
when you're in water, because that water's penetrating through the skin and, you know.
It's like when you get wrinkly after being in the bath for too
right.
long.
That's right, yeah. So it's, there's some trauma you just can't fix sometimes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just sometimes too difficult.
Yeah, right, but that's why you're there, to make sure that people can say their goodbyes in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So, and like like we said, so we're talking little Betty hasn't been found. What if she's never found? We're going to go through the stages of going into that part where we've now gone from losing the hair, the nails, the body's black and everything, where we start to then the whole body just decomposes altogether till we have just
dries skeleton. Up.
It then goes into the leather stage. You know, once all the liquid's gone, which is what decomposes the body, is the fluid and the liquid and everything. And once that starts to then dissipate, the skin starts to then go leathery, you know, whatever skin's left. And then eventually insects would have probably been in. They get in everywhere. It doesn't matter, you know, if nobody's found. And the insects would have done their natural job, is what insects do, and eventually the body would turn to just the bones.
Right.
So,
like you would see of an animal carcass out
absolutely.
In the paddock.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Right.
Some
and the bones would last for years and years and
years. Yeah, the bones take a long time to break down. And yeah, but they will eventually, but that's years.
Wow. Well, that's so heavy stuff.
But all again, right. It's interesting as well because, you know, human anatomy I'm very interested in and, you know, just nature and science itself, isn't it? It's a fascinating thing what we do to then break down. And
wow.
That's why a lot of people do the natural burials, isn't it? They want to go back to the earth and
compost.
And yeah, and basically go back and feed the earth again.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, please don't have nightmares. You know, we don't need to have nightmares.
Who, me or them?
Anybody,
we
you.
All will.
Not you, anybody, everybody, you. Everybody, don't have nightmares. So, yeah.
Okay, so well, thanks for that, Trace. That was really interesting.
Yes.
I wish we had something lighter to go on with now.
Yes.
That was, I'm quite lost for words. I'm not often lost for words, and I don't know why, because actually we've talked about all this stuff before.
Yeah, we have many times, yeah. Maybe it's a lot in one.
I'm flummoxed. Is that a word?
It
I'm
is flummoxed. Like, flummoxed. Yeah, you're flummoxed. Maybe it's just a lot in one.
There's a lot.
It's not scary, honestly. It's not scary.
You don't know what to say either, do
I
you?
I don't.
Oh, yeah, I'm a bit lost for words, Trace. Why don't you tell us a story?
A story. Let's think of a story. Oh, what about the beautiful story? A lady I had in her, I think she was in her 80s or early 90s.
Right.
And she died naturally.
So she had a long life.
She had a long life.
Right.
But she had lost a child. A young daughter.
Years and years and years ago,
years
clearly.
Years ago, I think it was 50 years
wow.
prior to her death. And the daughter was, at the time of death, I think 3 or 4 years old.
Right.
So her wishes were when she went, the baby's was to be exhumed.
Wow.
And laid with her in her coffin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we did that.
Oh. So you were involved in that?
Yeah, not in the exhuming the body. That wasn't me. I was in the mortuary waiting for her to arrive from her where
so
she
you had
been
the
buried.
Lady that had died?
Yep, so I had her mum ready and prepared, waiting for her daughter to arrive
right.
from the graveyard.
Right.
She came in, all wrapped up. Her coffin apparently there were still bits of coffin, but it had fallen to bits around her.
Right.
And they brought her in, and she was still quite well preserved, not totally. There wasn't lots. There was not lots. There was all of our bones were still there.
Right.
And some bits of leathery skin was still attached to some of the bones.
Right.
But all the hair was there in a hat. She had a little bonnet on, like a real old-fashioned bonnet in her full outfit, you know, and it was dusty. It was all very dusty. Everything was dusty.
So when it came, when this baby came to you, it was wrapped, like swaddled?
Yeah,
or?
It was swaddled, yeah. It was all wrapped up, and they had put it in the body bag as well, the people that exhumed her in. I brought her in, and I carefully, because we had to be very careful, because obviously she was fallen to bits, because all the bones were not attached anymore.
Right.
So, but she was still in that shape of a young girl, you know, a young child. And she had auburny strawberry hair.
Right.
And it was long.
Wow.
Because it was all still there in the hat.
Right.
And so I basically didn't really do much with it because I didn't want to take her clothes off or do anything like that. So dusted down a bit and then got a clean swaddle to wrap her in. And then I wrapped her up. And I placed her in her mother's arms, and I made sure our mum was really hugging her and cuddling her. And then I closed the lid.
You're gonna make me cry.
Aww.
That's so sweet.
So that was a beautiful.
Oh, God, people, grab the tissues.
Yeah. So it was supposed to be a happy ending.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? That's such a amazing time warpy thing, isn't it?
It is.
To take a baby. That mother would have been, what, in her 20s when she had that baby?
Absolutely.
And now she's 90-ish and deceased. And
all she ever wanted
she was got a baby back.
Yeah,
she
got her baby back. She got what she wanted, and they're together now still.
Oh, man.
Should we end that there?
Okay, that sounds like a good idea. Yeah. I need to go get some tissues.
Okay, lovely.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
We didn't traumatise you too much through this episode.
I hope not.
It wasn't our intention. And we look forward to talking to you in the next podcast.
Yes. Till next time, take care. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Congratulations, you made it through to the end.
Thanks for joining us. And if you have any questions, please send them to our email
at areyoudyingtoknow@gmail.com.
Or you can contact us through Insta on
r_u_dying_to_know. And the R and the U are actual words, so you need to spell them out. We'll see you next time.
Bye.